Hey guys, welcome to Call Me Whenever podcast. I'm Shanaza.
And I'm Shivani.
And yeah, that's our duo.
For those that know us or
have been listening to the pod for a bit,
know that Shanaza is the tea girl and I am the coffee addict. From supporting the local coffee shops to just going to the local Dunkin', I'm always looking for a business to give my $4.79 exact. One day after a shift, I stumbled upon the corner of 11th and Locust in Philly to get a caffeine fix, Saxby's. A month later, Roane University, where I attend, announced Saxby's debuting the first ever experiential learning cafe in Jersey at the College of Business. I'm super excited to introduce Nick Bayer, CEO of Saxby's today. When Saxby's was created in 2005, Nick never really considered it to be a coffee company. Instead, it's a social impact company fueled by amazing food, beverage, hospitality. And since then, Saxby's has grown from a corner cafe to a nearly 30-unit Philadelphia-based business with a singular mission: make life better. Nick introduced Saxby's pioneering experiential learning program in 2015 in partnership with Drexel University, which is located in Philly, guys. The nation's first entirely student-run cafe where students earn a full academic credit and wages through a university cooperative education program. Bayer's vision for the program is to embolden the next generation of entrepreneurs, providing undergrad students with tangible experience as a supplement to traditional undergrad classroom learning. Along with running an amazing business, Nick is currently the entrepreneur in residence at Cornell University's School of Hotel Administration, an adjunct professor at Drexel University, and the executive in residence at Temple University's Fox School of Business. He serves on the board of the Franklin Institute, Big Brothers Big Sisters Independence Region, the Community College of Philadelphia, Drexel University's Close School of Entrepreneurship, and Drexel Steinberg Career Development Center, as well as being a corporate council member for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. That sure was a mouthful. I'm out of breath. Thank you, Nick, for taking the time today to chat with us.
Thanks, Shivani. Thanks, Shanaza. It's great to be here with you both.
So when we do our research, we really like look into like the nitty gritty, you know, like, How did this happen? because of course I have a love of coffee and Saxby's, and I'm thinking Saxby's is going to be the next Starbucks. We need to get on it. But also I want to know why, you know, and it was super interesting for me to learn that for you, it wasn't really for coffee. It was actually, you know, for the business end of, you know, the business.
Yeah. Really the people side, you know, I think. And I would say it's not even still that way. It's even more so that way today, you know, almost a decade and a half later into my entrepreneurial journey that is Saxby's. You know, it's and it's sort of I take two different angles to it today. You know, like back then when I first started the business, I knew nothing about everything. You know, like I was so sort of naive to everything, but I had this like connection between my head and my heart that I knew in order for me to A, be happiest, and for me to make a difference in this world, I needed to create something. And I knew I needed to create something that was going to be very people-centric, which is why I sort of stumbled upon coffee. You know, is that coffee is one of those things that transcends age, it transcends race, it transcends wealth, it transcends geography. It's one of those things that it's the second most behind only water consume beverage in the world. You know, it's a connector. And so that's why I always loved the coffee business. But as I've learned over the years, it's a really amazing way to make social impact. You know, I liked it early on that it was a great way to transact business, that I could theoretically serve any and everyone. But what I learned over time is that I could also employ any or anyone. And now we start to realize that we can actually educate any or anyone. Yeah, the coffee business is an amazing business to teach through.
Mm-hmm. And before we get to the point when you started connecting business and social impact, which I'm sure has been so fulfilling for you, we'd love to know, take it back even to the origins of that decision to start with coffee, because being in the position where you know you want to create something, that can mean so many different things, right? You could have started a social program. You could have started a different kind of business. You could have maybe became a professor and started writing new academic work. So what was it about coffee that really attracted you there? Was there a certain experience, or did you just like the taste of coffee and like what the power of coffee that you mentioned? Or was there this like big, like coming to Jesus moment where you were like, okay, this is it? Or was it more of a transition?
Yeah, no, let's take it even way farther back than when I sort of started Saxby's, you know, because this is sort of like a life's mission. One of my favorite quotes, and I love quotes. I have like a whole like Word document that's pages and pages and pages long of quotes that I look
that's
at
like,
probably multiple times a day. One of my favorite ones is actually like of a colleague of mine. As Shivani mentioned, it took her out of breath. It takes me out of breath hearing my nonprofit work as well, for the record. But one of my colleagues on the board of the Franklin Institute here in Philadelphia is this phenomenal physician out of CHOP. His name is Dr. Paul Offit. And Paul is essentially a pediatric immunologist, if I have that correct. Mm-hmm. And he had a profile written on him in the Wall Street Journal probably like 2 years ago. Yeah, it was actually less than that because it was as the pandemic was starting to set in. And his quote was essentially, you know, the scars of our past should become the passions of our future. And I was like so struck by that. And I shot him a note and I was like, Paul, this actually perfectly articulates my journey to Saxby's, you know? And so like the scars of my past, you know, we all have them. You know, they come in different forms and fashions. And those of us that channel, right? I mean, those of us that channel it well have a lot of happiness in our lives. And those that don't sort of pull it behind them as baggage. And obviously, I really encourage people to take the former of those two paths. But and I always didn't, you know, like my parents were teenagers when they had me and they didn't get a chance to get an education. And as both of you guys are pursuing right now, you know, getting your education is what opens up the door to the opportunity to do what you truly love to do. And for those that do not get their education, the likelihood of getting the opportunity to do what you're good at and what you're passionate about is really few and far between. I saw that firsthand with my parents. And, you know, so I worked hard in school to their encouragement. They made a lot of sacrifices for me to eventually leave my neighborhood and go to a private high school that was challenging for me because I was a couple grades behind in sort of every subject, but it taught me resilience and it ultimately taught me self-confidence. You know, and I went to college, mm-hmm. first person in my family to graduate college. And what my parents preached to me for 18 years started to manifest itself. You know, I was building a network, I had a resume, I was getting internships, like I was ready to start accomplishing, but I needed to take inventory of what is it that I'm passionate about? Like, what is my dent in the universe going to be? You know, you only make a dent in this universe if you're pursuing something that you actually love. You know, you might make a small dent in the world because you're like, you know what? I'm going to go take that job that pays me the most amount of money. I'm going to hate it every day, but I'm going to do it because I'm going to make some money. If that's not what makes you passionate, you will run out of steam. But if you are doing something that you love to do, your steam will grow. You know, your desire to work hard, to get up early, to work late, to connect with people, to say yes to things, to hire people and scale will grow. And so I was trying to find out what that thing was for me. And so at 22, I was freaking out about what I was going to do. I took three different internships in three different cities in America. I was a baseball player. So I was contemplating a lot of different things. Literally, like, I was potentially going to get drafted in baseball. I was looking at finance. I was looking at consulting. I always joked that I wanted to be the American James Bond. I had applied to the CIA. Like, I had
you're a true Renaissance
ideas.
Man. So many
yeah, exactly.
options.
Like, interested so in everything, options. Not good at many things, you know? And so the big, like, striking thing for me, and I'm getting more to your question, Shanaza, is that I remember being 22 in my fraternity house in college, freaking out because graduation was right around the corner. And I picked up the phone and I called my seventh grade teacher, Mrs. Eichen, who was like really, really impactful in my life. She's the one who really encouraged my parents to put me into a school that was going to be more challenging for me. And mm-hmm. that really was like the first step in sort of changing my life. And so I called Mrs. Eichen, you know, stressed out. And she calmly and confidently was like, Nick, I became a teacher for this exact reason. Watching you about to get your diploma is exactly why I work as hard as I do, is like, I wanted to impact people's lives. And it like really set me straight on so many levels. The first is I didn't think I was a success at all. I hadn't accomplished anything, but I had so poor perspective. She knew what I'd already accomplished to get to that point, but that I was about to be able to like pursue anything I wanted
and
to
launch
do. And launch it. And the second thing is like, I remember hanging up the phone being like, that's exactly, I want to feel what Mrs. Aishin feels right now.
That fulfillment.
When she thinks back on her career, that fulfillment, I want to feel that. But going to college opened me up to a whole new world. I'd never really been exposed to business before. You know, I'd never really seen what entrepreneurship looked like in business and leadership. And I loved it. And the competitor in me is I'm at my best when I'm forced to be competitive and I have to work hard and I have to have some healthy paranoia, but I'm at my happiest when I'm doing things for other people. And so I was sort of armed with this desire to sort of put those two things together, you know? And,
right.
And look, I'm a lot older than you guys. Like when I was coming out of school, no one taught entrepreneurship. No one taught social entrepreneurship. No one was interviewing entrepreneurs to hear their life story. So I was a bit of a square peg in a round hole for quite some time, you know, because I have clarity on what I'm doing now and what I want to do in the future. And I can use some revisionist history to figure out what I was thinking back then.
Right. It's all retrospective.
Yeah, it's all retrospective.
That's so interesting because for us, like I would say like Chinaza and I, like we were really exposed to entrepreneurship like as soon as possible. Like we had a lot of opportunities growing up. And like specifically one thing that I can think of is organization called FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America. There's like all these competitive events and you can compete in entrepreneurship. I don't think Chinaza and I did. We did like public speaking.
No, we did other things,
but there's opportunities. There were and have been opportunities for us as we were, you know, going through high school to kind of get our foot in and learn a little bit about entrepreneurship. But like you said, for you, you didn't really have that. You had to kind of take it once,
forge that path
literally
by yourself.
Yeah.
And to add on to what Giovanni said, even the idea of what entrepreneurship is and being exposed to that idea, I think has evolved now. Like entrepreneurship has always been a reality of life since the beginning of time because people have had businesses, people have been transferring money or things that they consider value in exchange for goods and services. But I think that this concept of entrepreneurship has now become a little bit more is the word democratized, like more people are able to have like the concept of that, even people who aren't educated, which I don't think was the reality always, because now I think it's interesting after hearing you talk about education and how vital that is to being able to launch your ideas and do certain things. That's so true. But I'm also seeing in this generation, like a lot of people, because of how expensive college is, not go the college route in order to pursue entrepreneurship. So I'd be so interested to see your perspective there. I know we still need to get to the point of how you got into the coffee industry, but I'm so interested in every single aspect of your rich story that I just like want to hear it all.
Yeah. No, so I mean, I think like getting to that point, you know, I took my first job out of college. I was essentially doing like leadership consulting and yeah, it was great. I was around smart people. I was challenged, but I wasn't fulfilled. You know, I wasn't making a difference in people's lives at scale. You know, I think like when we all put our heads on the pillow at night or other times when we're journaling, whenever we're in sort of like contemplative thought, we think about and probably take, whether we realize it or not, we take inventory of like, what really are our skills? Like, because we're all different. You know, like
Chinaza
and Shivani, you guys have been friends for, you know, since you were little kids, and there's so many similarities, but you guys have unique individual strengths, not just amongst yourselves, but against everybody else that's in the world. And like, I just think that I'm like one of my skills, or maybe my only skill is to impact lives, like to be able to do it on a larger scale, not a like one-on-one. Like I think I'm fine in a one-on-one relationship. I think I'm better on a larger scale relationship. You know, I think that I make a bigger impact by stretching myself a little bit more. And so I always wanted to do something that was going to be at scale. You know, it wasn't going to scratch the itch for me to just be on a nonprofit board or just be a big brother. Like my little brother from Big Brothers Big Sisters, we've been brothers now for man, he just turned 25. So we've been brothers now since he was 11. So for 14 years, you know? And so like, that's a really important thing to me, but he's been on my journey at Saxby's, you know, for 14 years now. And so like, we're sort of impacting people's lives and learning together in this journey because we're trying to impact more than just each other's lives. We're trying to impact other people's
lives. Exactly.
So coffee was like, I was looking for something that could scale. You know, so I always knew I wanted to do something on a large scale. And look, one of the conversations I have, I try to make time every morning for entrepreneurs, whether it's students or people who are building fledgling businesses. And you know, I was talking to a young man today who's got a successful clothing business. It's a single unit here in Philadelphia. And he's like, Nick, I want to have units everywhere around the country. And I was like, why? Why do you want that? Like, well, I don't know. I just think that like my job is so hard right now. I have to do everything. It'll get easier when I get bigger. I'm like, let me tell you, it will get harder as you get bigger. Like, you have to figure why do you want to grow something? Why I wanted to grow something was the bigger Saxby's gets, the more social impact that we can make. You know, we're
that's so critical.
You know, and like
that's so critical.
But my wife owns a yoga Pilates, a very successful yoga and Pilates studio here in Rittenhouse Square in Center City, Philadelphia. And we're such a great yin and yang because she has this phenomenal studio that's been in business for 12 years. She has loyalty amongst her instructors and her clients that is just like, I don't know another business that has such tremendous consistency and loyalty of their business. She wants nothing to do with adding a second studio or a 12 studio or a 16 studio. Like, she is so content with exactly how she's impacting people's lives right now. And so I think entrepreneurs have to probe why and what and how are you going to do what you want? You have to be honest with yourself. Like, yeah, there's social pressure to be like, oh yeah, I have 1,000 units. Oh, you're cooler than someone who has 10. No, you're not. Because if you have 1,000 units and you have a broken social life, and your friends never see you and your significant other never sees you, or you fight all the time because you're so wed to your business, that's not successful. There's nothing that's like wisdom. Truly respectful in that. If you are content and proud and happy, and you are what I like to call a triple threat, you're a triple threat, meaning you are phenomenal at your personal relationships, you're phenomenal at your business relationships, and you're phenomenal in your community relationships. I don't believe success is being good at one or two of those things. True success is being good at all three, whether you're doing it at a massive size or a smaller size. I think the best comes out of me in trying to do it at a large size.
That's wisdom. And I love that self-awareness and distinction between kind of what outside perceptions of who you are and what success is. And then also like that more fulfilling, sustaining internal perspective of success, contentment, and fulfillment. Because I think that a lot of times, especially as young people, I think that that definition that you've exactly success means the bigger, the better. Like that definition of young, that definition of success that you've defined probably grew and was able to come more into vision for you over time as you had a lot of these experiences. But for young people, we tend to, first of all, primarily focus, or maybe I'm just speaking for me and Shivani, on career and profession and success and growth, output, like that external validation is validation for your success in general, point blank, period.
Yeah.
So if you're not expanding that year, if you're not growing that year, then there's something wrong. There's a problem it's an issue. And I love that shift in perspective about, wait, what are my internal goals? Like, who do I best serve practicing? Like, and knowing that, and knowing that that's of equal value of someone else. Because what I always think to myself is that service is honestly is the most important thing that you can do as a human being. Like, I don't know, don't care what you are doing. Like, everything that we do as human beings is to serve each other. And we're all providing services in different way. And somebody has to do every single job in the world. So that mindset of, if I'm not expanding in this, I'm not doing this better, then I'm worth less than somebody else who's doing it more, is just inherently logically fallible, because it means that at every single given moment, there are some people's lives that are worth more than others, because we're constantly going to have, some people are going to have to be doing certain jobs while others do other jobs. So I love that that kind of groundedness that you have. And I'm sure not all CEOs have that. And because of that, they probably suffer in other aspects of their life of being able to distinguish between the compartments of their life and make sure that each of them are at its peak, or that you're pouring into every single one of them. So that's
well, Shinaza, let me tell you, like I have been a work in progress myself. Like this isn't like I was born onto this planet and I am just like a perfection. I'm just perfection reincarnated. It's quite the opposite, you know, is right. Like I'm mostly educated from the school of hard knocks, and I continue to re-enroll myself in the school of hard knocks, you know? So it is like,
I love that.
It's like self-inflicted wounds over and over and over. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes that I have no one to blame but myself. But if you choose to not overcome them or sweep them under the rug, you need to blame yourself, you know? And now I've gotten to the point where I've been doing this for so long and our company is at a particular scale that like, I've learned to embrace that. Like the hard knocks are awesome. Like if you have the humility and the courage to unpackage whatever mistake you made, whether it's an interpersonal relationship, whether you said something wrong that you regret to your friend, do you, you know, naively and immaturely just act like it didn't happen? Or do you take the brave route to sit down with that person and have a really courageous conversation to be able to fix it, knowing that like, it might not resolve itself. You might just choose to no longer be friends. How do you do that at scale? And so I pass along this wisdom, not as a do as I say, but more as a like, do like I've learned this because I've had to learn by making a lot of mistakes.
That's like a level of like maturity. Like, I mean, obviously you're obviously a lot older. You've experienced a lot more than we have, but that's like a level of maturity that I think so many people our age, obviously we haven't reached that point of even interpersonal relationships. You know, a lot of people tend to run away from those problems, you know, even if they are in the wrong, you're like, okay, well, there's what, like a billion people in this world. Like, I'll just find another friend, you know, and that mentality is not healthy in any capacity. But speaking of mistakes that you were talking about, I mean, you know, I think I would be really interested in knowing, like, are there any like key mistakes that from the start of 2005? And I don't want to talk about all the mistakes because, you know, we might be here for a while.
We certainly do not have enough time for all of them. That's for sure.
But do you have any key mistakes that, you know, if you were like looking back and you had to tell one of your mentees that, okay, starting Saxby's, like these were some of the mistakes that I won't ever forget, because looking back on the younger Nick, you would kind of yell at him.
Yeah. So look, I think that if you make mistakes and you don't learn and grow from it, then shame on you, you know? So I think absolutely. That it's not good enough to just talk about a mistake. Like I can share a lot of mistakes. I'm like, oh my God, what were you thinking? But it's more important to say, you know, what were you thinking? What did you learn from it? And how did you actually grow and move forward from it? So like this whole notion that mistakes are opportunities, which look is so hard for us. I have a company filled with 22, 23 year olds, you know, like pre-COVID and not long after COVID, you know, we employ almost 1,000 people at Saxby's. The average age is about 23. And most of them are coming through the education system, regardless of school, regardless of how they got there. And the education system works against entrepreneurship. And what I mean by that is this. The U.S. education system is, and we learned this at an early age. I watch it with my son, 7 years old. He's getting ready to go into second grade. Here's what your semester is going to look like. Here's exactly what you need to read by when. Here's what we're going to quiz you on. Whoever follows the rules closest gets the prettiest star, and you did the best. And you just follow these rules over and over and over. And then you get into the real world, and you're like, whoa. There's that playbook.
The world is a jungle. It's not
my star.
There's no process for that.
There isn't, you know? And so like part of our biggest challenge here is like the executive team, the leaders, the like the more experienced folks at Saxby's is to teach this next generation of young people that the world is not perfect, that there is no rule book, that there is no playbook. And instead, look for those opportunities to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And the story that I like to give is this, because it was a big one for us, is, as I mentioned at the outset, I wanted coffee. I chose coffee because I wanted a business that was going to be people-centric. There's no more people-centric business in the world than coffee. None. Because if you think about the restaurants, not everyone can afford to go to a restaurant. If you think about hotels, not everyone can afford to go to hotels. You know, not everyone wants to go to those things. Coffee shops. I don't care if you're in India, Brazil, the South Side of Chicago, or Rittenhouse Square of Philadelphia. That is a central gathering place that any and everyone can afford and choose to be able to go to. And so coffee is the quintessential people business, A. B, I wanted something that could scale. You know, I wanted to make an impact in a lot of people's lives. And so I chose to franchise my business right out of the gates. Mind you, I didn't know anything about franchising. I didn't know what it took to be a successful franchisor. That's the like, that was like the youthful a cockiness that I had when I was starting Saxon. Like, well, it can't be that hard. McDonald's does it. So-and-so does it. I wanted to eat coffee. I want to scale. So franchising is going to be my thing. So we franchised Saxby's for nearly 10 years of our existence. And, you know, it made a lot of sense at the time, but I didn't make the investments. I didn't do what we needed to do for Saxby's to ultimately be able to be a great franchisor. And as a mission-driven business, it's difficult to be not only mission-driven, but also to be social impactful. Like at Saxby's, as a certified B Corp, we don't measure success solely on dollars and cents. Like when you become a certified B Corp and a public benefit company, which we are, you actually change your articles of incorporation. Every for-profit business in America, if you are not a public benefit company and or a certified B Corp, you have one responsibility as a business: to maximize return for shareholders. That's the only thing you're supposed to do. Right. When you become a public benefit company and a certified B Corp, that changes. You move away from what's called shareholder primacy, meaning your primary focus is to maximize value for shareholders, and you move into stakeholder capitalism, meaning all of your decisions have to be for the good of your shareholders, but also your employees, your vendors, and your communities alike.
That's wonderful.
So we value Saxby's. Success at Saxby's is not just financial, but it's all of those other stakeholders as well. And so I came to the realization that we were not going to be able to achieve that as a franchise business. You know, what makes franchising great is also what makes it difficult. It's sort of like herding cats. All cats want to go in different directions. We didn't have that luxury. If we were going to be a social impact company, a certified B Corp, we were not going to do it through franchising. And so, you know, I started to realize as Saxby's got an investment from a private equity group, franchising was our thing. And I started to get involved, asked to speak in higher ed, become an entrepreneur in residence at Cornell, and yada, 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 all these other things. I got to watch. It's better to be lucky than good sometimes. I was lucky to be brought into higher ed at a time where everybody started to teach entrepreneurship, you know, and everybody started to really look at how do we take the theory of entrepreneurship? How do you write a business plan? How do you raise money? How do you do a SWOT analysis? And how do you bring it to life through practice? Theory is not good enough. Theory needs to be tested through practice. And in the pedagogy of education, we call that experiential learning. You know, and so that's where, you know, our whole concept, which I'm sure we'll talk about, of experiential learning, that's how that came to life. So my biggest failure was franchising. We weren't a great franchisor. I'm mature enough now to say that we were not a great franchisor. Yes, we had success. We grew, yada, yada, yada. We opened locations, but we were not maximizing the impact that we could make as a business. And so, but if you think about our experiential learning platform, these are on-campus cafes. So we're opening at Shivani's University at Rowan in a couple months, less than a couple months.
That she is so excited.
There's no
she loves coffee, so
there's like no good start. I mean, I'm not a fan of Starbucks, but you know, like that's what you get on a college campus. It's a Barnes and Noble Starbucks. Like, come on now. And then there's Pete's Coffee, which I'm not trying to like crap on your competitor at all, but Pete's Coffee is not Pete's Coffee at my university. I think they just buy like the beans from like the grocery store.
Yeah.
So no, when absolutely. I heard that Saxby's was coming, I was really hyped.
So look, our product is amazing, and we'll probably talk about my philosophy on product. Like, I'm biased. I think our product is the best in the industry, but the reality is a lot of other
companies. I mean, you're the CEO of Saxby's.
Other people make great products as well, and the taste of product is a very subjective thing. You know, some people like dark roast, some people like light roast, some people like African coffee, some people like South American coffee. Like, but when you can put together fantastically great product and deliver it in a unique an inspiring environment, i.e. our experiential learning platform. So our SACS at Rowan is designed by students from the engineering school and will be exclusively run, meaning full team development, like full leadership of the team, full profit and loss authority and responsibility by undergraduate students at Rowan. You put together a great product with a unique and difference-making business model, that's when you get something that's truly, truly great. Our idea for experiential learning would have never come up if I didn't have the franchising experience and failures through franchising. Right. So we took failure and we've turned it into what we believe is our moonshot. You know, we believe that experiential learning is the way that we're going to make a difference in a lot of people's lives via SACS.
I think it would be perfect to transition right here talking about experiential learning, the program. I mean, you've talked a little bit about how it was inspired, obviously, after. I don't even think you should. It's not really even considered a failure. It was just a lesson to be learned that you didn't want to, like, franchising wasn't the option. But how can you speak a little bit more in depth on how that was even inspired? Because it's the first time I'm hearing about this phrase, experiential learning cafes. You know, tell us more about how that even kind of was, you know, thought of.
Yeah. So, again, we should probably keep a tracker of how many quotes that I reference. Here's another one. they say that the best way to learn is to teach. And I'm a great example of that. You know, I started getting phone calls. So I was wondering why I was getting these calls. So I'm getting calls from, like, leaders at Drexel and Cornell and all these other places to be like, Nick, can you come in the classroom? Our students are like, have an insatiable curiosity to learn entrepreneurship, but we know it's best to learn entrepreneurship, not just by telling all the stories of all your great successes and how, you know, seemingly, you know, you have all the right answers, but more importantly, tell the failures. You know, like, talk about how you went through those things. And so I started teaching at Cornell in 2013. As an entrepreneur in residence. And I felt like I had nothing, and I really probably didn't have anything to actually teach, but I was learning a lot. I was listening to students who were writing business plan. Some of them actually had businesses. Some of them were actually generating revenue and actually, like, raising money. Like, it was blowing me away how advanced they were and yet how young they were. But I started to hear, talking to deans and professors, I just had my antenna so high and I was just trying to learn. Anyone who would be like, Nick, would you want to meet? I'd be like, yes. So I was just learning and learning and learning. And the long story short is I saw a few, like a confluence of a few different things. One was whether it was Community College of Philadelphia, Drexel, Cornell, or anybody in between, everybody was now starting to teach entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is when I got people to be super candid about where's the shortcoming of how you're teaching entrepreneurship, what they would tell me is, Nick, we're really missing the practice side of this. Like, we're teaching theory. Yeah, like, that's so vital. And whatever it is, sorry, I'm just looking at my charger here. Whatever it is that you are actually studying, I don't care if it's engineering, if it's business, if it's leadership, if it's entrepreneurship, whatever it is that you are learning the theory of, you need to be able to hone those skills through the practice. And so all of these places were looking for, you know, the actual practice. And what they called it was experiential learning. And President Fry at Drexel University is a very entrepreneurial guy. He runs one of the largest universities in the country without a PhD. So he actually comes out of, like, the business world. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me, he's like, Nick, honestly, I think that the best way experiential learning is going to be taught to our students is going to be from the private sector, meaning, like, non-higher ed businesses. Higher ed are nonprofits. We need for-profit businesses that are like-minded and respectful of what we teach and how we teach, but have unique cultures that resonate with the young people in our schools. And I took that as, like, a challenge. You know, I took that as, like, oh, I think we could do that. Because when you think about a coffee shop, like, obviously Shivani loves coffee. You go in there and it smells good, and, like, the grinder and the espresso machine, all this kind of stuff going on. When you peel back the product side of it, every moving part that happens in any business, whether it's a huge company, a small company, whether it's a for-profit, a nonprofit, whether it's insurance or clothing, every moving part that happens behind the scenes of a business actually happens in a coffee shop. Managing people, supply chain, competition, marketing, finance, you name it, it all happens in a coffee business. And I believe that coffee is actually the perfect vehicle to teach young people, because young people today feel welcome and attracted to cafes. Not everyone's interested in a tech business. Not everyone's interested in a hotel. A cafe is something that both people, young people are attracted to, but it also has all the moving parts. And in what I think part of what we've done so well is in a digestible manner to be able to teach business. And so that's where this, the confluence of happenings and the confluence of our experience added in that led to, you know what? We just might be the company who can plug this gap. Everyone's looking for experiential learning. The real world needs young people who not just have learned things in the classroom, but have power skills like emotional intelligence, critical thinking, cultural agility. You can't learn those things sitting in the classroom.
Absolutely.
You need to learn those things in a live fire setting. And it just so happens that learning how to run your own on-campus Saxby's with no safety net under you, where you're going to have successes, you're going to have failures, you're going to have to relate to people of all different walks of life, 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. What an amazing way to learn. And so that's how our experiential learning platform was created.
And I think that that's so great, because hearing you talk about this kind of reminds me of this thing that we have at Harvard. Oh my gosh, I'm going to forget it now. It's terrible, but it's like the business that runs everything. It's like this Harvard, it's like a kind of a student run, a completely student run business that runs like the microwaves that the students get, the water that students get, the refrigerators, like the mini fridges that students get. I think it's called, I really forget, which is terrible.
You might as well not.
I'm a senior. I've been at home since sophomore year.
Right. So it's easy to forget now. Yeah.
HSA, Harvard Student Agencies.
Yeah.
And they're like this, they've grown into this like large conglomerate that has, that essentially runs so many of the services that students get at Harvard. And when I came, I didn't understand it because I was a student. So I was just like buying the services because that's what everybody used. But it wasn't until later when my friends started working for Harvard HSA, they're like, oh, I work for HSA, that I realized that they're running everything that we have on campus. And they're actually like the thriving business that runs everything from like the water I get to like the food that I'm eating. Everything is run by the students. And it's so great because those students go on to do so many amazing things because of the fact that they have the experience and experience the stress and the failure and the pain of running a business. Because sometimes I think that we can be too sheltered in an academic environment to face a lot of the realities that you were inevitably going to have to face in the workplace. And how much better is it to do that in a safe space where you're expected and encouraged in a way to fail than a place where it's so high stakes that you're going to get fired if you fail. So I think that like that is, it kind of is actually making more sense to me why that organization exists, because I always thought, oh, wouldn't it make sense more so for someone else to take over with more experience or more any of those things, like more like mistakes in the past that they've had. But it makes so much sense to me now, because experiential learning is actually probably one of the most powerful tools and very cutting edge in education. And I think it's so amazing that you're leading that. And I really do hope that other people take your lead and see that this is a route that really can advance us not only socially and educationally, but also as businesses, like the future for businesses to grow and expand, as long as we continue to think civically and not solely on profit maximization, which I think is the model that still dominates all of the businesses that we see in the country, for better or for worse.
Yep. Well said.
And so, I think that one question that I have, like kind of to close this out, is where you see Saxby's, because I've known about Saxby's too. Like, I think that marketing wise, you guys have done a great job, because I don't drink coffee. I've never had a cup of coffee in my lifetime. Like,
but it's
I drink tea.
They have chai lattes. They do.
You guys do.
They do.
Oh, so I mean, that's the crazy thing, Chinaza, is that our business has evolved a lot, obviously. Now our central focus is our experiential learning platform, which are on-campus cafes. So most of our business comes from you guys. It comes from 18 to 22-year-old college students. Obviously, there's some faculty and yada, yada, but most of our business is young. And as a result, our menu and our revenue generated off the menu has evolved significantly. So back in the day, our name used to be called Saxby's Coffee. That used to be our actual name. And then we went through a huge brand evolution 4 years ago, where I honestly one day walked into my office. We have a huge branding wall with our mission core values on it. It's like the predominant wall in the office. And I looked at our brand, I looked at our name, our colors, and our logo. And I looked at one of my team members. I was like, I do not like using this word, but it is the most accurate way for me to actually describe my feelings is I hate everything about the brand and the logo. And he's like, well, we should probably do something about that. So we hired this dynamic duo of two young female entrepreneurs. They had a consulting practice. We flew them in from LA and they did like months of studies, focus groups of our team members, of our guests, like the communities. And they came with a recommendation to drop coffee from our name. We hired an artist who created our own font, Philadelphia-based artist who created our own font that we now use for everything that we do. Our colors became so much more vibrant, like a gloss black, a fire engine red, and a sky blue. And our logo became the hot air balloon, you know, and it has been just like a power, like the power of branding. It has been so huge for us. My
Absolutely.
Point is that like dropping coffee from our name was necessary because Starbucks' name is Starbucks Coffee. So people immediately think of coffee. And coffee. You'll hear things like, oh, well, Chinaz doesn't drink coffee. So like, it's not really my vibe. We're not a coffee company anymore. You know, like we are an education and opportunity company that sells coffee and related items. And so drip coffee, you know, like if you go into Wawa or wherever you go and you see hot drip coffee, that is 4.1% of our sales, meaning 96% of our sales come from non-coffee. Which is crazy. Oh. We actually sell, if you add in our chai, our matcha, and our loose leaf tea, we sell more of that than we sell of hot coffee. Mind you, we sell a lot of cold brew, which is technically coffee.
People Shivani don't really knows.
Think of it as,
like that's, know, so. Come on. Like,
right.
I know, but I'm giving business, okay? Like,
if you look deeply at the stats, Nick, you'll see that Shivani's responsible for at least 30% of that.
I don't know about that.
If you look at the Excel sheet really closely, you'll see that it's Shivani's transactions.
Financially speaking, like, I should not be doing that. Like, I should not be going out and purchasing coffee. But for your business, it's great. Like,
It is. But you know what? You're not alone, Shivani. There's a lot of people who have, I mean, we have a lot of data, you know, of how frequently people come to our cafes. You know, it's because it's more than product. I mean, some people come for the product. Like, I just can't start my day without Saxby's cold brew, without my matcha, whatever it happens to be. For a lot of others, it's human connection. You know, it's coming in. To
it's
be
the
able to
culture
be like,
of a cafe, a coffee shop.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie though. That corner coffee shop that on 11th and Locust. Like every time you open the door, and I'm not even just saying that because like you own Saxby's. I'm saying it because it's true. Like you open up the doors, and it's like the buzziness from the outside. Like it doesn't like come through on the inside. It's super like chill vibes, like good music, like. It's just a complete different atmosphere. So I think you guys have definitely done a great job. And I, again, with the branding, I agree, like branding is so important. Cause like if a person can't recognize like what is Saxby's, what is Starbucks, Dunkin', whatever, what may be like, that is such an integral part of, you know, having a business and, you know, making it grow.
Yeah. And speaking of, if you guys get a second, like hit up our like Instagram right now. We just released a new campaign that we've been working on for a really long time called Make It at Saxby's. And it obviously, it changes out, like the gift changes out. So you're making a lot of different things at Saxby's, not just, and probably least importantly, the product. You're making friends, you're making moves, you're making decisions, you're making changes to the world through Saxby's. And it is, yeah, when you peel back the onion, it's essentially sort of our commitment to diversity and to investment into young people. And you know, it was born out of the fact that like we opened an experiential learning Saxby's at Bowie State University back in like right before Thanksgiving in 2019. So right before the pandemic, essentially. Bowie State is a historically Black college in Maryland, in Bowie, Maryland. It was opened in 1865 because newly freed slaves were not welcomed into the existing university system in America. So the only way they could pursue higher education was to create new schools for them, you know? And so Bowie is such an incredibly important place historically and for the future of this country, like all of its brethren within the HBCU world. So we're proud of the fact that you walk on that campus. You cannot go onto or exit that campus without going through the student center. And the center point of the student center is an exclusively Bowie State student run Saxby's. Mm-hmm. But what we saw is that, you know, when you look at the demographics, most of those young people, the campus is about 90% Black students, most of them didn't grow up with coffee. They didn't grow up drinking coffee. Right. And so what we were learning was they were like, oh, I believe in everything that Saxby stands for and I want to support the business, but I don't drink coffee, so it's not for me.
Right.
Like, little do they know, it's the opposite. Like, we actually like that you don't know anything about coffee. Like, this place is for you. So we were like, how do we go out and create a campaign to let people know? We called it internally the You Belong Here campaign. So, like, we wanted people to know you belong here. We don't care what your ethnicity is, your sexual orientation, your money, your drink coffee, doesn't matter. In fact, the more unique, the better, the more you belong here. That became our Make It at Saxby's campaign, which we literally just released this week, which I'm super excited for. I just cannot wait to see all the talented people that come in here and make it, make moves, make differences, make everything here at Saxby's.
No, I absolutely love it. And I love the message. I think that's why Shanaz and I were drawn to having this chat with you anyway. And I think this was such a perfect way. I mean, I think we could probably even have like a part two. I mean, there's so many, like, there's so much we can go into, but I think this was such a great start to the podcast and a perfect spot to close it up.
And before you finish up, Shimani, we have a tradition on this podcast where every single episode without fail, I think of a song that kind of relates to either the message or a specific moment throughout the pod. And for this episode, I really think, when I think about coffee culture, I often think of France. And you might not know this about me, but I speak French. I started taking French class in 7th grade. Not a part of a French-speaking household at all, but I've just been learning it for so long that it's drilled in my brain. And there's this one song that comes to my mind that I think oftentimes plays at coffee shops, because coffee shops tend to like French culture oftentimes, or they tend to intersect sometimes. And it's this song by Edith Piaf called Je ne regrette rien, which means like, I have nothing to regret in life. And that also kind of goes with a lot of the things that you've been saying about failure and success. So I've been really thinking about this throughout the episode. I'm not going to sing the whole thing. I'm just going to kind of say like the chorus, which is like, non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça bien égal, which means like, I don't really get anything, like everything that I've done, like everything that I've been through, like the good, the bad, it's all equal to me. Like, I don't regret anything in my life. So that kind of reminds me of the message that you've been saying throughout here. And now you guys get to hear me speak French too.
Well done. That's amazing. And speaking of not regretting, I took French through high school and then I had to take 2 years of it in college. And I understood so little of what you were saying. It sounded beautiful, Shanazi, but I shouldn't regret the fact that I took all that time studying French, and it clearly didn't help me whatsoever.
Oh, it's okay. My high school teachers and my middle school teachers hazed me in order for me to learn. So it's definitely not a normal situation. Like, ask Shivani, I would literally cry about my French class. Like, it was the most
difficult class. But at least you know it. You know another language. Like, I took Spanish for how many years, and I still can barely understand, you know? So, but I think this was a perfect spot to close it up, especially now with this amazing song that you've added, Shanaza. Nick, do you have anything? I mean, social wise, obviously everyone follow at Saxby's. It's literally at Saxby's. They've gotten the user. But if there's anything else you want the listeners to go to, Nick?
No. I mean, I think hit Saxby's. I'm pretty active on my social as well, so feel free to reach out to me. It's certainly on LinkedIn. Like, I love making the world a smaller, more connected place. I think that's a great way to do it. So hit me up on Instagram or LinkedIn, and if I could do anything to help you. But I think we're in this together. You know, business has to be a vehicle for good. I think as consumers, we need to support the businesses that walk the walk. And as leaders, we need to make those hard decisions that value what our business does against the externalities of what our businesses create. And I'm speaking more to the negative side. So having the courage to be able to do that, our collective actions are what change and make this world a better place.
Oh, Well said. Let me just drop our users and then we'll close this up. So you guys already know you guys can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and any other platform that you like to listen to podcasts. Call me at Call Me Whenever. Follow us, leave us a review. Shoot us an email if you want to learn more.
Be a guest. Advice.
Find us on LinkedIn too, because that's how we make connections as well. Follow us. And I think I kind of covered everything.
On Instagram, all of the other platforms, Anchor, everything. Perfect. And as always,
call
us whenever. Bye, guys. Love you.